On today's edition of the Locked On Nets podcast, I go solo to talk about the Nets' loss to the Denver Nuggets, another blown lead. Plus, I bounce around some topics from around the league, including Kristaps Porzingis' return to Madison Square Garden and Carmelo Anthony back in the NBA, all that and more coming up on Locked On Nets.
You are Locked On Nets, your daily Brooklyn Nets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome in to a late night edition of the Locked On Nets podcast. My name is Marcus Barrow-Hall. Josh is hopefully sleeping. It is 1:13 a.m. as I record this following another disappointing Nets loss, this time at the hands of the Denver Nuggets. The Nets go down in this one 101-93, dropping them to 4-7 on the year. Obviously not the start that Nets fans were hoping for. I'm going to get into that and more, all that in the game, plus some news around the league, Carmelo Anthony signing, Kristaps Porzingis returning to New York City for the first time, but obviously want to get into the Brooklyn Nets first and foremost. So this one was kind of deja vu all over again, as they said at many points during the game. This was very reminiscent of the game that the Nets just lost to the Utah Jazz, in which they built up a huge lead in the first half, played really, really well in the first half. The passing was great. Turnovers were down. The Nets were making free throws. They did pretty much everything that Josh and I have said that they've needed to do in these last couple games that they've taken the loss in. And then in the second half, that kind of all unraveled. The team scored 35 points in the first quarter, which was incredible. In the second half as a whole, they scored 32. So obviously not what you want to see there. Some of that was just missing wide open shots. Some of that was a lack of ball movement, a lack of decisiveness on transition plays. There was a lot of like just drives to the hoop that seemed to go nowhere and wound up with guys forcing up layups. And give the Nuggets credit because they really limited the Nets on the offensive glass in the second half and kind of kept them to those one and done possessions. There was a lot of Mason Plumlee out there. I'm sure Nets fans remember him. There was a lot of Paul Millsap screaming and playing good basketball. And then Will Barton really carried the Nuggets down the stretch, hitting a lot of tough shots and really inspiring the team. Him, Millsap, Plumlee, who I mentioned, Monty Morris, they really led the charge. They led the turnaround for Denver, which was strange because guys like Nikola Jokic and Jamal Murray each played less than 30 minutes, and when they were out there, they weren't particularly effective, especially Murray, who was 1-for-11 in this game for 4 points. So it felt like the Nets did kind of what they had to do, especially on the defensive end. Denver scored 101, which in this current NBA, especially with the way that the Nets have been scoring the ball, you would think that that would kind of be a recipe for a victory, that this Nets team that's averaged basically 120 points per game this year, scoring 102 should be no problem. But this was the Nets' worst offensive performance of the season, despite the fact that they scored 61 in the first half and were basically doing exactly what they had done up until this point. It's just that's how bad those third and fourth quarters were. Looking at it for the Nets, they just couldn't hit anything from three. Torian Prince, 2-of-11. Kyrie Irving, Garrett Temple, each 1-for-5. Spencer Dinwiddie, 1-for-7. Joe Harris, 1-for-4. Ironically, the one guy who was effective from three was Jonan Musa, who, yes, he hit 2 threes, scored 10 points off the bench. I did not think he looked very good. I thought he looked confused. I thought he looked timid. There was one play where he was, he either got a loose ball or a steal or something, and he was kind of leading the fast break. It was him and Torian Prince. They had what could have been a 2-on-1 if Musa had kind of filled the lane, pushed the ball effectively, and found Prince cutting. Instead, he sort of slowed up, allowed the Nuggets to get back on defense. It wound up being a 2-on-3 that Musa kind of dropped off to Prince, and then Musa just kind of like retreated back to the three-point line, and Prince wound up forcing a layup in basically triple coverage, which was kind of the story of the second half for the Nets offensively. There just wasn't as much movement, and it's a shame because in the first half, the passing was really, really good. Kyrie Irving had 9 assists in this game. And the team as a whole just was kind of pinging the ball around. They found Jared Allen inside. J.A. played pretty well in this game, honestly, 17 and 10 for him on 7 of 10 shooting. And so it was good to see him show up. It's kind of, I said it was deja vu earlier, just because it was the Nets building a big lead and then blowing it once again on this road trip. But in a lot of ways, this was not the way that they've lost games in the first 10 games of the season. This was, they protected the ball. They had 7 turnovers. They were 13 of 16 from the line. So it wasn't like the silly mistakes that beat them. In this game, it was one of the hottest shooting teams in the league, in the Brooklyn Nets, that just went completely cold in the second half. And they seemed to get in their head. They started forcing shots, especially in those last like 2 or 3 minutes. It just seemed like whoever had the ball was going to dribble down and pull up from three and just hope it went in, and it did not go in. So definitely a tough look on offense in that second half. There were some plays and some more things I wanted to highlight. Iman Shumpert, who the Nets just signed, did not get any action in this game. I'm sure he'll be worked in eventually. It might have just been that it was too close to him signing with the team for him to, or for Kenny, I should say, to feel comfortable trusting Shumpert in this game. And then besides that, I did want to point out some good things, because that first half was really nice. It was good to see Jared Allen going up strong. He had a couple nice plays early in the first quarter. He had a rare for him, an and one, where he kind of just overpowered the defense, went right up through. I think it was Will Barton, was attempting to dunk it, wound up just kind of throwing it in and getting the and one call. Chris Webber, who was on the call, along with Marv Albert, even said, which if this is pretty much all you need to know about how much Chris Webber watches games he's not doing. He said, Allen has great hands and he finishes strong inside, which as Net fans know, that's not usually the case. It was in this game, but just funny to me, because this is basically what Josh and I have talked about the last couple podcasts, where a guy like Jared Allen, for these national guys or for people who aren't necessarily Brooklyn Nets fans, who aren't watching every game and can't really watch every game, they just see those highlight plays. They see that and one he had. They see the nice block he had on, I think it was Jamal Murray or Gary Harris earlier in this game. They see those plays. They don't see him bobbling the ball. They don't see all the misses. So this was a national TV game, so it was good that Jared Allen showed up in this game. It would have been nice if he had told the rest of the Nets to show up. Kyrie Irving, I thought, passed the ball really, really effectively in the first half. And I thought that it would kind of be sort of a thing that you see great players do, which is where they pick a part of the game where they're just going to kind of set everyone else up, get everyone else involved, and then down the stretch take over and go for the kill and just be that star player, that All-NBA player, that all-star player that Kyrie was brought to Brooklyn to be. And I think he probably intended for that to happen, because he did get all of his teammates involved. But then down the stretch, it seemed like he didn't have legs, which is kind of what Josh and I talked about in the last game. He's looked really, really tired down the stretch of these last few games. And sure, part of that is probably because the Nets are playing at altitude. Part of that is probably that they're finally getting towards the end of this long road trip on the West Coast. But part of it is probably also that he's playing 35 minutes, that Caris LeVert is out of the lineup, so even more playmaking burden is on him. He can't necessarily take possessions off on offense. And then part of it might just be that he, I don't know, maybe he's not in the best shape. Maybe that facial injury that he had in the preseason didn't let him necessarily work into game shape and game preparedness like he would have hoped. And maybe that set him back a little bit and kind of put him to a place where he is now overextending himself. And with all these injuries the Nets have had, it doesn't seem like that's going to be given a chance to let up at any time soon. So I don't know, because he almost sat out this game with that shoulder injury. So part of me wonders if it's worth just like giving him a rest day here and there, if you're Kenny Atkinson, to try to better use him. But at the same time, if the Nets are going to keep blowing games like this down the stretch and they have all these injuries and they do want to still hang around in this playoff race, which, like Josh and I talked about yesterday, they will still be in when Caris LeVert returns, almost like no matter how bad they do, just because that's how bad the Eastern Conference is. We saw it last season when the Nets were 8-18 and they rebounded and wound up basically a slightly above 500 team that was like a solid playoff team. So if this team can even like rip off like a 3-4 game winning streak, which doesn't sound like a lot, but even that would pretty much put them back into like solid playoff footing. So I would say overall, I'm not super worried about the Nets missing the playoffs at this point, but Josh and I both, I think, expected 45 to 47 wins. I think I expected them to reach the second round or at least get close. That looks like that's going to be a stretch at this point, if this is how the team is going to play. They just can't put together a full good game. It seems like they'll play well for a quarter, they'll play well for a half like they did in this game, but by the time the third quarter rolls around, that's kind of been the bugaboo for this Nets team, and it continued into the fourth quarter in this game. They just, if they build a big lead, you're just kind of waiting until they blow it. And I was like following along the game on Twitter. That's kind of what all of the people that I follow were saying. Like, it was halftime. Even on the Inside the NBA on TNT, guys, because this was a national TV game. I think it was either Shaq or Charles Barkley basically said at halftime when the Nets were up by a dozen that Denver was going to win the game by six, and they wound up winning by eight. So it was pretty much spot on. I think everyone who has paid attention to how this Nets season has started has been aware that this is a team that can't really protect leads for whatever reason. I think you can attribute that to just a lack of depth and the fact that their main horses, guys like Kyrie Irving, are going to get tired. Spencer Dinwiddie also played 35 minutes in this game. He looked, honestly, more effective than the box score shows. He was 6 for 18, but I felt like any time he wanted to, he got to the rim and was able to get a pretty easy layup, which we saw him do down the stretch when the Nets almost came back into it after Denver made their run to go up by 9. Dinwiddie scored back-to-back layups. Denver had to call timeout once the lead was cut to 5. So, I don't know. The box score isn't doing him much justice, but I thought he played pretty decently, and I thought that this continued a run of better games from him of late, where he's back more to focusing on sort of attacking the basket and not just settling for those pull-up threes. Like in this game, he had a couple plays where he got switches onto Plumlee or onto any big man on the Nuggets and just kind of went right by them, just like a straight line drive, which is what Josh and I have talked about, just trying to cut out all the fat. Don't worry about trying to cross a guy up or embarrass a guy or hitting a cool step back. Just, you're faster than him, just get to the rim, make an easy layup. So I thought he did a better job of that in this game once again. But yeah, this is definitely tough if you're the Nets. Now 4-7, heading into this next game on the road trip. That's going to be against the Chicago Bulls in a couple days. So this is another winnable game. This is now, at least the Nets are back on the East Coast, so maybe that changes things. And yeah, this is they need to stop the bleeding. This is now three losses in a row after it looked like they had maybe turned things around with those wins over the Pelicans and Blazers, despite like excellent individual performances from Brandon Ingram and Damian Lillard in those games. But they get blown out by the Suns. They get big leads against the Jazz and the Nuggets. They blow both those games. So now we've got this Bulls game, trying to salvage that one and pull to 2-3 on this road trip, which, honestly, if you looked at that and you said that the Nets went 2-3, that's not the worst thing. You probably would have expected them to beat the Bulls and the Suns, lose to the Nuggets and Jazz, maybe a toss-up with the Blazers. But however they get it done, if they can just kind of tread water until Caris LeVert is back, try to figure things out, work on that rotation. Josh and I have talked about it so many times, but Jean Amusa is playing way too much. I would like to see Rhodey Cruz get another shot. I would obviously like to see David Nwaba play more. I thought he looked really good. He only played 4 minutes in this game against Denver, but Nwaba played really well in that second quarter. He had great defense on Jeremy Grant, even though Grant wound up hitting like a really tough fadeaway jumper. I thought his defense was really good. He had a nice pump fake and drive. He was battling for offensive rebounds. Yeah, I'm just not really sure why he's not playing more and why Musa is getting such a long leash, especially when he'll hit shots occasionally, but I just feel like he looks lost out there. So definitely looking to see some rotation adjustments made going forward. Hopefully Nwaba gets more of Musa's minutes. Maybe we see Rhodey get another shot. I think Claxton has played really well, though, so tough to find minutes with them playing Claxton at the four, which is still a little bit perplexing, but he's done well, so tough to question that move. And yeah, those moves, maybe getting Kyrie a little bit more rest earlier in the game so that he's fresher late. Not quite sure what to adjust. But yeah, hopefully things change in that Chicago game. So we'll talk about that later. And then I'm also going to get into Carmelo Anthony signing with the team and Kristaps Porzingis returning to Madison Square Garden. More in a sec on Locked On Nets. They said it would never happen, but Carmelo Anthony is back in the NBA after not having appeared in a game in basically a full calendar year. I think his last game with Houston was in December of 2018. It's now obviously November of 2019. We all know what month and year we are in. But Carmelo Anthony signing a non-guaranteed deal with the Portland Trail Blazers, as reported by Adrian Wojnarowski of ESPN. This is unexpected, at least for me. I thought, honestly, that Melo was done, not because of any talent reasons or anything like that. It just felt like so much time had passed since he last played. Like, I would have thought if he was going to come back, it would have been for a team in the playoffs last season, or something would have happened in the offseason heading into this year. This is surprising to me, but it makes sense for Portland considering that they've been without Yusuf Nurkic this whole time. They lost Zach Collins, and they've been struggling. Mario Hezonja has gotten a ton of minutes for them at the four spot. So this is kind of the position that they needed to fill anyway. I feel like I would have brought Melo's name up more as a possible fit with the Nets if I thought that there was like a realistic chance of him playing. I think that for Brooklyn, like to just tie this back from a Nets perspective, they've needed help at the 3-4 position. That's what Josh and I have talked about. That's why we've brought up names like Dario Saric, like Jeremy Grant, who we just saw in this game for Denver, as guys that could help them. And Carmelo Anthony might not wind up making like a huge impact for Portland, but I just feel like the offensive player that he was at his peak, he obviously doesn't have that ceiling anymore, but just that foundation of a player and a guy who's been around that long. He's always been underrated defensively. He's got really quick hands. He is a good passer when he like looks up and wants to make those decisions. So it's tough because you didn't really see him buy into those roles in Houston or Oklahoma City as much as you would have wanted. So from that perspective, it's a little bit like a poor man's version of Kyrie, where you want this guy because he's so incredibly talented, but he might want more of a role than he's probably cut out for, which is what Kyrie had with the Celtics, where he was probably better as a number two like he was in Cleveland, but he's going to want to be a number one. And Carmelo at this stage is probably best as like at best a tertiary playmaker, and he's going to want to be either a number one or number two option, which is just not going to happen anymore. So from that perspective, I understand why a lot of teams were wary to go near him, but at the same time, I'm glad Carmelo Anthony is back in the league. I'm really excited to see what he can do in Portland after they kind of have like courted him for the better part of 2 years at this point, dating back to when he was still with the Knicks. So looking forward to see how that fit goes down. And then pivoting to some other news in the league, staying with this like vague former Knicks theme, I guess, that I've concocted here. Kristaps Porzingis made his return to Madison Square Garden. This was an incredible game. It was on TNT before Nets Nuggets, so I was watching it anyway just because I don't like to change the channel. It's very easy to just leave it on one thing. That's how they get you. But yeah, KP struggled in this game, especially down the stretch. He put up decent counting stats. He was 20 points, 11 rebounds, shot 7 for 17, but he just got completely bullied down the stretch by Julius Randle. Like, the game was tied. Randle drove right into his chest, and Porzingis just kind of flopped backwards, and Randle had a wide-open layup because of it. And I saw a few people tweet this. That's just, like, really not the time to flop, is in the last, like, minute and a half of the game, because best-case scenario is you get that offensive foul call, and worst-case scenario is what we saw, which is a wide-open layup. So it's probably better to just, like, play defense, and I feel like you have a better shot at keeping the game in your own hands as opposed to basically relying on the refs to bail you out, which is kind of what he did. So that was a tough look for Porzingis. He then, like, he was in the post, and he took a mid-range jumper that he did not make. And the Knicks wound up winning 106-103. So I just found this interesting because in a season where there has been more change players changing teams, that kind of thing, than ever before. It seems like every night there's a guy returning to his to play against his former team for the first time, and especially like on the road like this was, because the Knicks and Mavs did play previously, but that game was in Dallas. So the Nets have one of those guys who is going to be doing just that, returning to play against his old team at their place when the Nets take on the Boston Celtics. Kyrie Irving will be making his return to TD Garden. What do they call it? I know they call it, they used to call it the Boston Garden, but whatever they call it, he's going to be making his return there pretty soon. That game's coming up in about a week and a half, 2 weeks. What is that? Yeah, 12 days from now, on the 27th, the Nets will be in Boston. So I'm curious to see what kind of reaction he gets from the crowd there. Porzingis was booed a ton in the Garden, and there's no love lost there. Kind of similar to how I feel it's going to be for Kyrie. Maybe not quite as intense, just because I think us here in New York were a little bit more rowdy, maybe. Not that people in Boston are not rowdy, but I just think that the passion of like a New York fan base is probably going to trump any other, given like equal circumstances. So that being said, I am excited to see what happens when Kyrie and the Nets take on the Celtics in Boston in a week and a half. Hopefully they're more competitive. Hopefully they have a few more wins on their in their belt, I guess. They're a little closer to 500. That would be nice. Another thing that would be nice would be another podcast coming soon, which is going to happen. Josh and I will be back together very shortly, hopefully talking about a win over the Chicago Bulls. That would be nice. Until then, you can follow us on Twitter at LockedOnNets. You can follow Josh at JMBass_. Follow me at Marcus Barahal. Locked On Nets is part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your daily source for everything about your favorite team. And we'll be back in your ears very soon. Until next time, be well. Bye.